I'm Stephen John Drew from Better Podcasting, a podcast about podcasting, part of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
I am the Green Arrow.
The Green Arrow has entered through the front door.
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor, my name is SP, and your other award-winning reporters for this episode 234 of the Starling Tribune is Chris.
Rematch?
You know, every time she said that, and I watched it a couple of times, I was thinking, this is definitely a rematch for something, and we got it at the end of the episode. And welcoming back to the show, the award-winning chief news anchor, Michelle.
You really know how to take the fun out of everything.
Me? I just introduced you and welcomed you back. It is award-winning news anchor and everything, and this is how you greet me back?
I'm really talking to my pancreas, which is, you know, causing all these problems.
I see. Well, it's great to have you back on the show, Michelle. We definitely missed you last week.
Well, I missed you guys, too, and I'm glad to be back.
All right. This podcast is recorded on Saturday, March 30th, 2019, live on www.geeks.live.
That's right, SP, and this afternoon we'll be discussing the most recent episode of Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past week that probably will impact the greater episodes, the greater universe, so that includes Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and any other show they decide to add between now and when we record this next episode.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com. Well, you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be back. Michelle, why don't you go ahead and break down this episode of Arrow that we watched this week?
Sure. It's called Inheritance. It's Season 7, Episode 17. It aired Monday, March 25th, 2019. It's directed by Pascio Pruti. Credits include 3 Banshee Origins, 1 Arrow, and has been a costume designer on 15 episodes. Written by Sarah Tuckoff. Credits include 9 episodes of Arrow and is also an executive story editor. And Elizabeth Kim. Writing credits include 3 episodes of Arrow.
We are in the season finale standpoint and spring break functions within the year. So there was only 2 episodes this past week on the CW that were comic book related to the DC Comics. The first of which was on Sunday, Supergirl had the 15th episode of the 4th season called The House of L to a live rating of 1.12. And then this episode of Arrow aired Monday, the 25th of March, 2019, to a live rating of 1.01. I will call that a victory. We had 2 shows above a 1 rating this week.
Yeah, with all that basketball stuff going on.
I think the basketball really impacted Supergirl, if anything else. There was no basketball on Monday, but then again, people were hungover and wanting to go to bed early because they stayed up late watching some cliffhangers. So, yeah, I'll give it that. We definitely had some basketball-related issues and spring break because kids are on spring break. They're away on spring break with their parents. The college kids are wherever. So, yeah, I think the live rating was down, but given that, they had great ratings. We often start our discussion about the major theme of the episode, and we've related the theme on all these shows to the title. So we're going to start there. Inheritance is the title. So, Michelle, what was the meaning of inheritance?
Well, we have Emiko, and we see that Robert, abandoning her. And she, of course, tries to eventually please her father. And he bluntly tells her, hey, Queen Consolidated is for Oliver and for no one else. And she ends up going to the Ninth Circle. So I guess in a way, you know, she ends up inheriting this position in this new family for her, because she's not going to get inherited by Queen. So instead, she's going to forge her way in the Night Circle.
Sadly, she's the one that got all the business sense. Oliver didn't. And she does have some unique ideas. And then she's going to translate them into the Ninth Circle, as we've seen. Chris, what do you think about that? Her elevation to a leadership role in the Ninth Circle.
Well, it was an interesting little twist. You think that she's just a minion in the Ninth Circle. And then it's, oh no, she's leading this thing. She's in charge of it all. Because she's really mad at Daddy. So she went to go and do that. An oversimplification, of course. But it was pretty cool to learn that she's basically controlling everything.
I have a question for you guys. When we hear Robert with Emiko's mom, we hear him say she could take everything. Obviously, he's talking about Moira being able to take everything and the business. And then he's like, even to Emiko, like, I can't even hire you for this job. Not even like giving her a fake name or anything like that. He's not even willing to do that. To me, this episode really weakens Robert. Is it just me?
Oh, I thought that completely when I was watching this, is that any redemption that we've received from Robert over the years, it's clearly broken down with this. The series' best Schwartz wants us to leave this series thinking poorly of Robert Queen, because this might not be the last time we see him, but probably is going to be the last time we see him. Of course, it was in flashbacks to when Emiko was a little girl, and then when she was a young woman, but so not current time, basically. And he's been gone from the show since, of course, the pilot episode in real time. But I definitely think it weakened him. It showed him as not being able to deal with the fact that he did have a second family and a second family with a daughter, and he had no way of getting to that daughter because Moira was shutting him down. I think that Robert was just too adept at maneuvering in business to be able to not maneuver that in his personal life. That's just me. But the show clearly showed that that was a major fault.
I mean, the show's pretty much illustrated at this point that if you ever had Robert Queen on a pedestal, he's been knocked off it. The only thing you could argue that he's ever done that isn't to protect himself or his own interests was killing himself so Oliver could live. And you could argue that might not have even been in his best interest, because he left him a mission to go and save the city and right the wrongs on the path he'd been along. So Robert Queen's an inherently selfish person, and he does whatever he can do to survive. It doesn't necessarily matter as much about his family, on either family, really. Like, we thought that his sacrifice for Oliver was a great thing early on, until you realize, oh no, maybe it's not really. He left him to clean up his mess. Oh no, now we find out that, yes, he had a daughter, Thea, that he took in. He knew it wasn't his daughter, and that's great, but at the same time, he abandoned his own other daughter that wasn't even brought into the fold. So he doesn't really do good things.
Well, we had some fights this episode, and I didn't pay too close of attention on these fights, but I did enjoy them, the experience, as we were going through it. And the first fight is not necessarily a fight, but we learn out later it really was the training scene with Oliver and Emiko in Emiko's hiding place, hideout, whatever you want to call it. We didn't really get a name for it. And Oliver is teaching her the ways of fighting, and she claims to be kicking his butt. And they have this little, you know, in like the West Wing, they called it a walk and talk. I'm wondering what to refer to, like the fight and talk. I mean, Chris, what do you think? What would you call that?
Ooh, fight and talk. We need to find something that rhymes. That's the problem.
Yeah, so we'll keep on our eyes for that. But that was clearly what was going on. They were training and they were talking back and forth. And for where Emiko, it was a lot more serious. With Oliver, he was just trying to learn his sister. So, Michelle, during that scene, did you get the sense that Emiko had something to hide, something underneath the surface?
Yes, she was able to deflect not only Oliver's blows, but also his questions. She got him to admit that Talia taught him Taekwondo, and he tried to get more out of her. And it was more like, oh, there was this guy and it's complicated. And like, that was it.
Right. So there was she was being secretive, and Oliver was trying to break in. And I think because she was being secretive, once Diggle approached her, once Laurel approached him later on, he was a little bit more okay with understanding where she was mentally. Now, he still wanted to save her in the end of the show, like he wants to save everybody that's family. But at least he acknowledged the fact that he was fighting her and it wasn't a benevolent thing at the end. So,
but I also get where Oliver is, where he's not trying to press her when he's not getting a bunch of details, because as far as he knows, his sister's very closed off. It's very hard to gain her trust. And the fact that he's getting to talk with her like that in his mind is probably steps towards something else. So I kind of get why he wouldn't want to press and be like, well, tell me more about this person that trained you and try and find things out, because she's liable just to step back and walk away based off of past behavior. So Oliver Queen's kind of in a difficult spot there. It's okay, I want to get to know my sister better. She's not really telling me everything, but if I push too hard, then I can't keep getting to know my sister.
We also learn later on, and we'll get back to the fights in a second, that Dante is the one that trained her, at least initially. We have not seen, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, we have not seen Dante have any fight moves. He's always being protected and wheeled away. But supposedly, he is the trainer of Emiko. So I'm wondering, at one point in time, we're going to see Mr. Highlander himself actually get in the action.
Didn't we, a couple episodes ago, see him do his knife action against Lila?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, he's very adept at throwing knives. We know that, and knife play. So, okay. Yeah, I'll go with that. I'm wondering what other things that they're going to have him or a stuntman that looks like him do in the future. Because you know he's going to be involved in the fight. The character is going to be involved in the fighting at some point. There was also the fight at the chemical depot where they were trying to get the materials for the sarin gas. And there was, I won't call it a fight because it really wasn't a fight, but there was the break-in at Palmer Tech as well. So those went okay. The big fights, though, in this episode were when Emiko and Oliver were fighting in the Arrow Cave, and then when they reprised that fight on the abandoned airfield later.
I really liked the cave fight because it seems as though like they were like catching each other's arrows and whatever, but it ended with Oliver having Emiko in his trademark neck-breaking move, that hold that we've seen since episode one, season one, and he hesitates because obviously that's his sister, and she is able to, you know, take advantage of that and get away.
I liked the particular, the catching the arrows and deflecting the arrows sort of thing, part of that fight. I had to watch it like three times. Because I was like, okay, this is great. And then I noticed that the very last episode, the very last arrow of Emiko, it was real. And it was real because Oliver's grabbing it and it jars the entire bow over to the side. I don't think they could have done that with CGI. I think it had to have been a real arrow. Now, the tip might have been rubber, plastic, whatever. But I think the shaft itself was sturdy enough so that it could yank around that entire bow. So that was pretty cool that they did the CGI arrows up to that point. And you're right, I noticed the neck hold where Emiko, you could clearly see like when somebody's straining to breathe and, you know, all the blood's going to their head and staying there and not allowed to go down. It was a make or break point for the fight. And I think Oliver let her go at that point. Yeah.
Oliver hesitated a little bit because it's his sister, but this is also another one of those fights where you get the varying martial arts skills of Oliver Queen. We've seen him pretty much become Ra's al Ghul because he's one of the best fighters in the world, and now a character who we've heard is pretty well trained, but we haven't seen a ton of it, kind of kicks his butt. I mean, I guess maybe part of that's because of his hesitation because it's his sister, but it's one of those things that irks me with this show on occasion is that it's inconsistent just how good he is, and this felt like one of those, well, he's holding back, but it doesn't seem like he should be getting his butt handed to him quite as well, even if he is holding back. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being overly critical.
It's a fair point, because you'd think he'd have a little bit more experience, even in these situations. I mean, even in the dialogue back and forth with Diggle a couple of times, he's like, yeah, we've been here before. It's not helping that you're reminding me of this. But you would think that he would figure out how to deal with it a little bit better. And although he didn't go off the deep end, you can clearly tell that everything was bothering him. Also, one last note on the fights. So Oliver is going after the drones. We'll get to the Jones in a bit. But Oliver's going after the Palmer Tech stealth drones. Felicity turns off the stealth and Oliver starts shooting the drones. He gets 7 of the 8 drones. This is all feasible in my mind. But when you take a look at Oliver shooting the 7 arrows, that film was obviously sped up. You could tell by the way he's blinking in the shot. And it bothered me a little bit, because they have done such a good job of portraying real stunts this whole time. And then they do this little trick of speeding up Oliver shooting 7 or 8 arrows. And I don't know, should I be bothered by that, guys?
No, it's the best way they have to do it. And I didn't notice it at first until I went back and rewound a little bit, because I missed some stuff there and went, oh, wait, I think this is sped up. So for television purposes, it's all right.
All right. Michelle, did you notice anything there? Or were you just having fun watching the fight?
I was just having fun watching the fight. I kind of knew where it was going to go, except for the whole, you know, Emiko being in charge. But I was just, you know, hey, this is a pretty cool fight.
Yeah. So drones, yeah, that's pretty cool. Those were, you know, standard fake drones or run-of-the-mill drones. They weren't anything spectacular or anything like that. I should know because, you know, I fly drones and everything. But the stealth stuff on there, that was pretty unique. Yeah, as far as I know, we don't have any stealth drones flying, and not that size anyway, flying around. And as far as I know, we'll leave that lay, but yeah, the drones, okay. Now, because I've flown drones, I will tell you that usually their range is limited to that size, probably about 25 minutes of flight time. Their top speed is about 35 miles an hour. So if they're way out of town, I don't necessarily know that they could get from point A to point B and have any discernible distance between the two. So I'm just saying that because I fly drones, I was taken out of that part of the plot a little bit, but that's probably just me because I fly drones.
Well, this is the Ninth Circle, so maybe they have
supercharged batteries.
Yeah, supercharged batteries, special little microchippy things, everything smaller. So maybe it's that.
Okay. We'll run with that. We didn't get any flash forward this episode. I was a little bit disappointed on that, but it seems as though we just had a complete full episode in the future. I was willing to let it slide. I'm hoping that doesn't happen too much, that we actually do continue the future plot. Michelle, you weren't with us last week. How did you feel about not getting that flash forward plot in this episode after what we witnessed last episode?
I liked it. I liked the whole just one episode in the flash forward. It was interesting seeing everyone come together. We had the verification that definitely, you know, Felicity is in charge of Archer. She regrets it. And like I've been saying, I wonder if we're going to be getting a Ninth Circle. Like ever since we had the mention of Dante, you know, in previous episodes, I've been talking about the Ninth Circle. Are we going to get it? And now we finally have the Ninth Circle mentioned and such. And considering what happened last week, I'm wondering if, because we learned that Emiko had a chance to warn Robert about the Queen's Gambit, because that's that little gift. When Robert rejects her, she hides that. And when she opens it, you see the plans of the Queen's Gambit and where Merlin planted the bombs. She could have, you know, did that, but he was like, you know what, Oliver's my kid, you're not going to get anything. And so she's like, okay, fine, die on your way to China. And it's just like, so the Ninth Circle has known about Star City and the Queens for a while. I'm wondering if what happens in the future, I'm wondering if this is a result of what the Ninth Circle is going to be doing here in the present. And then what they're doing here leads to like the rise of the Glades and stuff.
Okay, great question I have on the Queen's Gambit. I was under the opinion that the Ninth Circle was telling her to plant those bombs. So she was the one that sabotaged the Queen's Gambit. Did I misread that?
So it's something the internet's kind of questioning right now, because remember, up until now, we assumed and been told it was Malcolm Merlyn responsible for doing that. And then this week's episode kind of seems to retcon that a bit to make it seem like it's Emiko and the Ninth Circle that did it, but made it look like Merlin did it. So I don't know. And the internet is also kind of collectively doing this little head scratch going, what's the actual case?
If you see in the black envelope when she has it on the table with her meeting with Robert,
mm-hmm.
And then he says he's going on the trip. And he's like, is there anything else? And she takes that envelope and she hides it. And she's like, no, there's nothing else. When she opens it, you see on there the explosive charges and it says Malcolm Merlyn on there. She burns that. She could have warned Robert that Malcolm Merlyn had planted those bombs. Instead, since he rejected her, she took a lighter to it and burnt it. She burnt the whole thing. She's just like, well, F you, Daddy. You're not my family. The Ninth Circle is my family. And that's what she does. She burns that whole queen thing, you know, everything that's in there. And she just washes her hands of it. And it was basically like, if he dies, he dies, whatever.
Okay.
Why would the Ninth Circle want to warn Robert Queen?
Remember, Dante says, there's no split loyalties. The Ninth Circle is your family. Here is our gift to you for joining us. So it was one of those things of, we want you to be a part of it. The Ninth Circle, one of the things that it does in the comic book is it plants people in positions of power. So if Robert would have accepted Emiko, that would have been okay. She would have been a plant of the Ninth Circle and Queen Consolidated. So she could have still been with the Ninth Circle, but she just would have been doing their bidding while working in Queen Consolidated. But that was their gift to her. That's what Dante says. This is our gift to you. And it was their gift, getting some sort of power within Queen Consolidated. And that information was their gift. That's why they did it. It was to bring Emiko definitely into the Ninth Circle. That's why they did it.
Okay, that makes sense.
So the gift was telling her that her dad was going to die, or the gift was telling her she had a chance to save her dad?
That she could save him.
Yeah, she had the power to save him, but he abandoned her again.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm glad you were here to explain that, because I wouldn't have gone that way. I would have said that Emiko was the one that sabotaged the Green's Gambit.
No.
All right. Well, over in another industry in town, Smoketech, we have some activity going on along with the resurgence of Elena Whitlock, which we now know her last name as Whitlock. She was also stuck in the Tech Village with those awful vests. What's wrong with the vests? I don't understand. The vests are like uniform. That's fine.
They're not very fashionable, though.
It's not like she had to put flair on them.
Ooh.
Anyway, the big question that I have from Elena is, when and how did Felicity collect Elena's DNA?
I think we're better off not knowing.
That's what I'm thinking.
Because plot, to steal a phrase from Neil.
I mean, I know they worked together. So what, did Felicity, like, have a cup of hers?
I mean, what would the motive have been back then, though, to be like, oh, she drank out of this cup, I'm going to collect a DNA sample. I'm going back towards the because plot.
I guess, yeah, because it's creepy any way you look at it.
Oh, super creepy.
The other thing about Elena, though, is she is left alone for an entire day with Archer, and she is a like super hacker. I think that Elena has basically copied Archer, and she's got her own copy somewhere.
I don't know. So you think she's a plant of Emiko's, basically, to get in the door so they can get Archer, or she has her own motives?
Both. I don't know which. Both are plausible.
Well, it's interesting. I like the theory.
Especially since Emiko says, I've had access to it, or I've seen it, or whatever. I want this. So I could see her already manipulating Elena, not knowing that Felicity was going to get in touch with her. Or maybe Emiko planted the DNA on Felicity so that Felicity could find Elena or something. I wouldn't be surprised, especially what we see with Emiko, her sparring back and forth with Laurel Lance, because Laurel tried to tail her and Emiko wasn't happy with that. So, you know, she was doing stuff to make life difficult for Laurel. But in the second thought, she was like, well, maybe I'm just setting you free. And there's that whole thing. So I think Emiko is not beyond manipulating Elena and Felicity. Chris, what did you think about your favorite character and her arc in this episode?
Well, there's certainly a selling out for the whole Laurel's redeemed arc. It certainly seems like when people are like, are you sure we can trust her? You have Felicity coming to her defense, and others going, well, she's changed a lot. Yeah, she's still a murderer. She still killed lots of people. She's still not really your Laurel, but parading around like she is your Laurel. But regardless, it's interesting to see her go toe-to-toe with Emiko and kind of lose when it's all said and done. We know she tailed her. You mentioned that. And at the end of the episode, Emiko wanders back into her office and basically says, yeah, I'm responsible for the press getting those pictures of you and the dragon.
How can she get out of that? Do you think she can?
Well, I mean, the implication is that she doesn't if you watch the preview for next week's episode. So it seems unlikely that she would get out of that. She's probably stuck with it. Unless she says it's her Earth 3 counterpart and there's multiple Earths and it must have been the me from another Earth, so you can't blame me kind of thing.
But if she does that, then people will be like, well, wait, if there's an Earth 3 you, what Earth are you from? Are you really our Laurel?
Of course I'm your Laurel. How else could I not be? I know. It's a weak argument. I don't know how, what they're going to go with it, but next week or the next episode, I don't think it's next week, I think we have a week off, is the Canaries one. So it seems like they're setting it up so that she is on the hunt to find a way to either redeem her name or try and kill Emiko.
Moving on to Mr. John Diggle. He didn't have too much of a huge role in this episode, although he did play the conscience to Oliver and he gave Felicity Dante's DNA, which was interesting. You know, that was a because of plot moment. Absolutely. And yeah, that was it for Mr. John Diggle.
Well, it makes more sense for Diggle, though, because they would collect evidence on people. So they would have that locked up and behind glass. So yes, it's possible you could have a blade of his that has DNA on it. Whereas the whole Elena thing is, years ago, you collected her DNA because why?
Yeah, because they did have that fight. You know, Argus, you know, Lila and everything, they had that fight with him. So them having Dante's DNA, very plausible.
I guess that's all I had for the episode. Is there anything I missed, Chris?
I liked Emiko's new suit, the red suit. I like that much more than the Green Arrow suit she's wearing to kind of make people think that there was two Green Arrows or that she was the Green Arrow while Oliver was in jail. So I kind of like the red suit. I hope they keep using it.
I also think that Dante and Emiko can definitely sell acting. And I think they did a great job of that. I didn't question when I watched it the first time around the fact that Emiko was still part of the Ninth Circle and it was just a plant to get her in the Arrow Cave. I didn't question that. Meaning, I didn't think it was for that reason. I think they sold it quite well. Michelle, anything that you'd like to have a second round on?
I think learning that Emiko is part of the Night Circle explains why we don't see her in the flash forward, at least not yet, unless we see an older version of her come along and tell Renee something, which one of the things from last week's episode is what happens to Renee to go from street level justice to Mr. Corporate Mayor? That's going to be something to see.
We did talk about that last week in your absence. We carried that narrative forward. All right, that's it for the episode. Michelle, what do we got looking at us next week?
Arrow returns April 15th with Living Proof, so we have some time to go back to Legends of Tomorrow. Tagumo Attack, Season 4, Episode 5. It aired Monday, November 19th, 2018. Following Constantine's sacrifice last week, the Legends will need some major magical firepower to help get their new friend back on his feet. It's directed by Alexandra LaRoche, written by Kido Shimizu and Ubay Muhammad.
That's right, and we are set to start wrapping things up. It's a quick episode this week. We got to go in depth on a few things. So thank you to everyone who did join us as we record this a slightly different time over on Geeks.live, where we stream this show live every Thursday night normally. Also, thank you to everyone who went to starlingtribune.com, downloads the audio replay, or catches the video replay over at youtube.com/gunnageek.
If you happen to have an Amazon device, you can enable our podcast as a skill, which will give you full player control. It's a little bit different than normally listening to a podcast on there, so we encourage you to do that. Also, we love using our Discord server, which you can find at gunnageek.com/discord. There is a special channel set up for Starling Tribune chat, as well as a general TV and film channel to chat all this stuff as well. And remember, you can always catch us as we record live at www.geeks.live. Normally, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on Thursdays. This was a little bit different because, well, life.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you could call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag sped up arrow shooting.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Haas withdrawal.
And I am at Michelle Ely signing off with hashtag creepy DNA collection. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.